Welcome to the deep dive. You've handed us a stack of sources on one of the most talked about and sometimes polarizing assets in the digital world, XRP.
Definitely polarizing.
Yeah. So our mission today is to just cut through all that noise and give you a really structured analysis. We're going to unpack the core tech, the institutional appeal, and then, confront the risks.
That's right. And when you look at the data, XRP doesn't really fit the mold of a typical crypto asset. It's positioned as this, well, this institutional grade tool for
But
banks.
it's also a high-risk speculative asset.
Exactly. It's both at the same time. So we need to synthesize that tension. Why would a big bank even consider it? And what kind of unique baggage does it carry?
Okay, so let's unpack this. Let's start with the fundamental value proposition: speed and utility. What is this thing, really?
Well, at its core, XRP is the native coin of the XRP ledger, the XRPL, and it was built from the ground up to solve one massive problem.
Slow, expensive global payments.
That's it. And you can't really talk about XRP without talking about the company, Ripple. They're the ones building the enterprise products that actually use it.
And that's where we get to its primary utility, right? This idea of a bridge currency.
Precisely. That is the heart of its value proposition. It's the key ingredient in Ripple's main product, which is called on-demand liquidity, or ODL.
ODL, on-demand liquidity. I mean, that sounds technical, but what problem is it actually solving for a bank?
Okay, so think about how cross-border payments work now. If a bank in the U.S. wants to send, say, $1 million to Japan, they have to have Japanese yen sitting in an account over there.
A pre-funded account.
A pre-funded account. That's capital that's just tied up doing nothing. It's inefficient. ODL gets rid of that. Instead, the U.S. bank converts dollars to XRP, sends the XRP, which happens almost instantly,
Right.
and the bank in Japan immediately converts that XRP into yen. No more pre-funded accounts.
So the traditional system, using something like SWIFT, it's like sending an international letter through three different postal services. It takes days.
And it's expensive. You have fees at every single step.
But with XRP as this bridge, it's basically an instant text message.
It's a great analogy. The sources are pretty clear. Traditional systems take days to settle. With the XRPL, we're talking about 3 to 5 seconds.
3 to 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And the cost, because that's huge for institutions.
It's often less than a single cent. So you're going from dollars or even percentages down to fractions of a penny. For large-scale flows, that's just transformational.
And that performance isn't just magic, it's engineered specifically for this.
It is. The XRPL is built for high throughput. The sources say it can handle up to 1,500 transactions per second.
Which, just for context, is a massive step up from where a lot of first-gen blockchains were.
A huge step up. And we should also touch on the energy efficiency piece. For big public-facing companies, this matters. It's not a proof-of-work system like Bitcoin.
So, no massive energy consumption from mining.
Right. It uses a different consensus mechanism that needs very little power, making it a much more sustainable or green option.
Yeah.
That's a real selling point for banks that have ESG mandates to worry about.
Okay, so the engine is there. It's fast, it's cheap. But an engine is useless if no one's driving the car. Let's shift gears to adoption.
This is where it gets really interesting for investors. Ripple, the company, has been laser-focused on institutional support. They aren't really chasing retail users. They're going straight to banks, remittance companies, payment providers.
And that focus on institutions, it completely changes the stability argument, doesn't it?
It does. It suggests a use case driven by enterprise needs, not just speculation. If your value is tied to real-world utility, that could eventually lead to a very different volatility profile. Their whole strategy is integration, not disruption.
They want to work within the system.
Exactly. Build a foothold within the existing financial plumbing.
But we can't talk about the investment case without bringing up the elephant in the room for years. The SEC lawsuit in the US.
A massive, massive event. And the partial resolution was a huge milestone for the whole industry.
So, what did the ruling actually establish?
It made a crucial distinction. The court found that XRP is generally not a security when it's sold to the public on secondary markets, like on an exchange.
So, for most people trading it, it's more like a digital commodity.
In that context, yes.
Yeah.
And that clarity had immediate practical consequences, didn't
Oh,
it?
absolutely. What happens when an asset gets that kind of regulatory green light?
Well, first, the floodgates opened for relistings. All the major U.S. exchanges that had delisted it brought it right back.
And beyond the US?
It provided a kind of template.
Yeah.
It helped pave the way for spot XRP ETFs in other countries. And ETFs are basically on-ramps for large-scale institutional capital.
So the ruling was a global signal.
It really was. And there's one more kind of subtle driver here in the investor case. It's tokenomics. It's actually deflationary.
I find this mechanism fascinating. So every time you send XRP, there's a tiny transaction fee. But that fee doesn't go to anyone.
No, it's permanently burned, destroyed, gone forever.
So over time, even though it's a tiny amount per transaction, the total supply of XRP is slowly, constantly decreasing.
It creates this very gentle deflationary pressure.
Which, if you pair that with rising adoption, could theoretically create some serious upward pressure on the price in the long run.
That's the theory. It's an attractive feature for anyone looking past the, day-to-day volatility.
Okay, so a strong case. Utility, adoption, regulatory clarity. But high potential always comes with high risk. Let's pivot to the downsides.
And we have to start with the biggest critique you always hear about XRP centralization.
For a crypto asset, that's a serious charge.
It is, because it kind of goes against the core ethos. The XRPL doesn't work like Bitcoin or Ethereum. It uses a consensus mechanism that relies on a pre-approved list of validators.
The unique node list, or UNL.
Right. And that initial list is curated by Ripple. So while it's not centralized to a single server, the process is definitely seen as less decentralized than a totally open network.
Because in a network like Ethereum, anyone can become a validator if they have the stake. Here, you have to be on the list.
Exactly. There's a gatekeeper, and that raises questions about governance and control, especially for the crypto purists.
But isn't that controlled environment the very thing that makes it attractive to a bank? I mean, a bank doesn't want a chaotic, open source, free-for-all.
That is the ultimate trade-off. You're absolutely right. They are trading that pure decentralization for guaranteed performance, speed, and having a known entity to deal with.
It's a feature, not a bug, for their target
For
audience.
their target audience, yes.
Okay, what's next on the risk list? Competition has to be a big one.
It's huge, and it's growing. The cross-border payment space is the target for everyone now. You've got other crypto projects, you have sophisticated stablecoins, and you have the big one on the horizon.
CBDCs, central bank digital currencies.
Plus, the old systems like SWIFT aren't just standing still. They're modernizing, too. It's getting very, very crowded.
And there's a really critical risk here related to adoption, isn't there? The difference between Ripple's tech and the XRP token itself.
This is a major one. A bank could, in theory, adopt Ripple's underlying technology, the ledger, the messaging for their own internal processes, without ever needing to use the actual XRP token as a bridge currency.
And if they bypass the token, that directly weakens the demand for XRP and obviously its market value. The whole value proposition is tied to ODL usage.
It is. We also have to talk about the supply overhang from Ripple Labs. The company still holds a massive amount of XRP in escrow.
The numbers are staggering. And even though the release is on a predictable schedule, just knowing that huge supply is there, it looms over the market.
It always does. These periodic sales, even if planned, create a constant source of potential selling pressure. Investors have to factor that in.
And finally, we just have to say it. Volatility. Even with the partnerships and the legal wins, it is still a high-risk crypto asset.
Absolutely. Its price moves with the broader market. If Bitcoin catches a cold, XRP gets the flu. But it also has its own specific triggers news about Ripple or regulatory rumblings in other countries. That U.S. ruling helped, but it didn't eliminate global risk.
So that brings us to the end of our deep dive. We've really analyzed this core tension, haven't we? On one hand, you have an asset built for incredible speed, one that has navigated huge regulatory battles and landed major partnerships.
But on the other hand, that institutional appeal comes at the cost of decentralization and with the very real risk of that massive corporate-controlled token supply.
So that leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to consider.
If XRP's greatest strength is its ability to integrate into the existing regulated financial world, a world that demands stability and known governance, how much does that traditional crypto ideal of decentralization really matter for its success? And more importantly, how do those two goals, deep financial immigration and true decentralized autonomy, ultimately conflict with each other? That's the real debate that will shape its future.